You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. We thank you for joining us via iTunes, Stitcher, Buzzsprout, however you're coming to us today. We really appreciate you listening and passing this along. My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, is the stained blue dress to my cigar, my dear friend Andy. The toaster ran out of steam. Someone unplugged the toaster.
I don't know what happened.
Didn't even singe my bread.
I kind of lost it before I started.
Well, that's as good a way as any to start another episode. Our silent partner, Nate, is joining us, making the sound happen as he does each and every week. Andy, how have things been going? You know, how are you?
Man, things have been pretty good.
Things have been pretty good?
Yeah.
Just
winding
another
down
day
the
in
summer.
Paradise. Yeah. Yeah, it's grinding down. Your kids are getting ready to go back to school, maybe, right? Are kids going back to school?
I don't know.
Is that what's happening out in the world?
I might not send them this year. I think they've learned enough.
No, I think...
they're too smart for their own good, if you ask
right.
me.
You don't want to saddle them with debt, student loan debt, you know?
No, I'm going to skip all the elementary stuff and send them to, like, super college for, like, one of those, like, MK Ultra programs. So they can get like really good
brainwash them.
Well, I mostly just want their telekinesis to like be better than it is, because right now I'm not noticing any.
You really have to network to get your kids into a good MK Ultra program, though.
Yeah.
Like, you have to know somebody.
They're pretty popular. There's a lottery system, though.
Yeah,
but you know,
right? But you're doing the legwork,
mm-hmm.
and they're good candidates. I mean, they're ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I'm hopeful that, you know, by the time I have kids that are like of college age, college will no longer be necessary. That's sort of my investment plan for putting my kids through school eventually, is that they won't need it. Therefore, it won't cost me anything.
There you go.
That might be wishful thinking. Hopefully, that's the same for you and your kids, too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm totally thinking more of like the government LSD program, like telekinesis thing, instead of school.
I'd put as many eggs as you can spare in that basket.
Yeah.
Well, Andy, our guest this week was Robert Duncan Gray, who is a Portland musician. I think that is as specific as we can get, because he does so many different kinds of music. He's one man.
And art and poetry and just
art
all
and poetry.
Over the place.
We had a really great conversation about sort of the arc of his musical career, some of his influences. He was born in Great Britain, raised in Germany, came to the States in 1998, and was living in Southern California. So he's got a lot of different tastes that he brings to bear. And we had a really just kind of free-flowing, interesting conversation about his musical career. So,
oh, did we?
We sure did.
Yeah, that's a great reality show.
Yeah, it's a Bravo show.
This week on Horse Hunters.
I do horse hunting.
A sweet young Appaloosa.
Are you talking about the shopping for a horse or murdering a horse?
Look at a horse and be like, nah.
No.
No,
and they
you.
Could do the spinoff, The Tiny Horse Hunters. You know, like the tiny houses are all the rage now.
Mm-hmm.
Those little tiny miniature horses.
Oh, I like those. They mm-hmm. have like long manes and little fur around their hooves.
Right, right. Yes. Very dainty yet dignified.
I've met Arnold Schwarzenegger's miniature horse.
What?
Yeah,
really?
How did that
real.
Happen?
His personal miniature horse.
Yeah. I was in Los Angeles, and I have some friends who are in a band from New York. They're called Zula, and they like played a show. And then we went to a party afterwards that was just like in the hills. And I was in college in Santa Barbara, but I didn't really go to Los Angeles and like do this hills thing.
Right.
But
this party was hosted by Arnold Schwarzenegger's tiny horse.
Basically. Whiskey was his name.
It's a great name for a horse.
It's really good. And Whiskey was lovely. It's like a fancy house and has a swimming pool in the back, and then it had stables. And these people are just like look after horses of the rich and famous. And so like a proper horse and then a miniature horse. And it was just like all these kids who were really rich and had been to high school together. And they just like... or like, oh yeah, there's Whiskey over there, and then Whiskey came out and like hung out, and I just took selfies with him.
Were there other celebrity horses in this stable?
No, it was like there were two stables. They just did personalized horse care
one at a time.
It was when I think he was divorcing with Maria Shriver.
Gotcha.
He had to hide those horses.
Right. He couldn't do it.
You can't split the horse. He was very firm about that, keeping whiskey.
Yeah.
He had two horses. Funny. Maybe whiskey was his horse's horse.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
He's like, you know, my horse is lonely. I think he needs his own tiny horse of himself.
Right.
Yeah.
I used to love those little, I loved dinosaurs when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into, the prehistoric mammals and those little tiny horses, like the Eohippus, that get hunted by, giant birds.
Good, thank you.
Those would be amazing to have.
Yes, those are cool. Or, a horse with, snake features.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
If we want to get real weird
with it. Yeah, the real creature.
That just makes me think of, some kind of mythological creature that's part snake, part horse.
Which parts? Which?
Its eyes, has snake eyes and a snake tongue. Probably snake teeth, but the body of a horse, but with a
does
cool
it have
scales.
A horse head? Because if it's a snake tongue, it's smelling with its tongue,
mm-hmm.
or it's kind of, you know. So does it still have the big nostrils?
It's kind of like
is it built for running?
Yeah, yeah,
I was thinking of a horse with a Medusa mane.
That would be cool. Mm.
That'd be tight.
There we go.
Be hard to ride because really it constantly cool. bite you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't.
You'd have to have reins. You couldn't kind of ride it without. You know,
unless they're really sweet snakes and they just give you love bites.
Right. Maybe they're the emerald boas or something like that. That's not really going to be able to constrict you unless it gets around your neck or something like
mm-hmm.
that.
I feel like it would still be dangerously distracting.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Or each of its legs are snakes.
But if you spend enough time around a Medusa snake horse, I think you probably get used to it. You can get used to anything.
True.
So.
Totally.
Yeah.
Or if it was just a snake with snakes coming out where a horse's parts would be coming out, but it just slithered in all directions and fought itself constantly. And
a snake.
It was just a mess.
That had horse's parts coming out where horse parts would come out?
Yeah, yeah. So instead of legs, it's snakes. And then its head's a snake and its body's another snake. And
so it's not a snake. It's a horse where snakes are coming out of all the horse parts.
No. It's one mass of snakes connected into a horp shape.
One mass of snakes?
One mass of snakes.
I like that.
Oh, it's a writhing snake pile that has been shaped into a functional horse.
Yeah, kind of reverse human centipede style, like tails, connected by their tails with their heads pointing out.
Gotcha.
Just mm-hmm. angry that they're a thing.
Is it wrapped, or is it like that? Is that the skin of a regular horse? Or is it, or is it snakes all the way through?
I didn't think about that.
Right.
Man. A snake made out of a horse skin would be really weird.
Why doesn't a furry snake exist?
Yeah, you think that would have been a mutation that took over, like snow snakes?
That'd be cute.
Yeah.
Little fuzzy snow snake?
You know I think they're must be in Japan or something like that, those monkeys that live in near the hot springs in the mountains?
Those monkeys.
If there was
cool.
a furry snake to hunt those soaking monkeys, that would be interesting.
Maybe there is
that
and we haven't
sad.
Discovered
they
it
They look so calm.
They really do.
They're just
really...
chilling there and yeah. then... There's a creepy, that creepy snake
a
thing.
Creepy
in the
water. Hot water snow snake.
It's a furry snake though, and it can't go in the hot springs or it'll get too cold. It doesn't have the monkey's constitution. It's since it's cold blooded.
That's true.
It would boil and die.
And that's the answer. The cold blooded is the answer as to why not.
No, I think they do exist. They just hide in the snow drifts around. Then that's why those monkeys are in that hot water. Mm-hmm. They're trying to stay away from the snow snakes.
Yeah. Well, I think that we covered the animal kingdom as to the extent that we know it and understand it. I think we've given people a lot of good information about that.
For this week. I understand it more now.
Yeah.
I felt like a novice at the beginning of that conversation.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's just a thought exercise. You know, sometimes it is not about facts necessarily.
No.
It's really just about thinking out loud through a situation. And that's really what the show is all about. But now we want to talk about you. I'd love to talk about... So... Rob, you are a diverse creator of music, and I'm always curious when people can split their creative energies in 3-4 different directions musically.
Mm-hmm.
In what context do you place yourself as a creator of music?
Like a real amateur, like a not professional.
Just the blanket term non-professional.
Like a kid playing with Legos wrong or something like that. Everything that I've ever done is very homemade and using I've always recorded on 4-tracks or 8-tracks, but not even the right kind of 4-tracks or 8-tracks, like the digital kind. So the sound quality has always been really terrible.
Yeah.
And it's mostly just like I get and collect like a lot of weird different instruments, and mostly like don't know how to use them.
Where does this start? At what point did you start creating, whether it's just sounds or what songs? What was the first thing that kind of came out of you creatively from a music point of view?
From the music point of view, definitely. Pretty much, when I turned 21 years old, I got some money for my birthday, and I bought my first guitar and an 8-track on the same day. And
at 21?
At 21, yeah, wow. Yeah.
Had you played any instruments at all before that?
No. I had some bongos.
Okay.
When I was a kid.
It's a good start.
Yeah. I wanted a drum kit, and I got bongos.
That's like getting the goldfish when you want the puppy.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But I still have the bongos. That's nice. Like they have like tape all around them and stuff. But yeah, so I like was learning to play guitar at the same time as recording. So I've always recorded.
So did it get to a point where kind of the lo-fi sort of amateur sensibility became an aesthetic? Or has it always just been you're comfortable and happy being at this level and you don't want it to go in other directions?
It kind of started as an aesthetic, I would say. Like, I was into that kind of thing. You kind of get, these days, you have a choice right at the beginning whether you're going to just, like, do it on a computer or not do it on a computer. And the things that I was listening to at the time were, like, probably mostly, like, Daniel Johnston recordings and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Johnston? Mm-hmm. Johnston?
The blues guy,
the strange folk bedroom musician. Are you familiar with Daniel Johnston?
I think I thought I was.
Also an amazing artist. That guy's pretty cool.
He's a like basically outsider music. Mm-hmm. And I really loved Billy Childish a lot.
I'm a big fan of Billy Childish. Yeah,
that was like my first name making music and performing was Silly Rob Childish. Because I stole it from him.
I first heard Billy Childish. I think it was The Bitter Cup, that song, in the Clinton Street Pub. And I asked the bartender, hey, what are we listening to? And she was like, oh, it's Billy Childish. And like stormed off like I was like an idiot. It was awesome.
She was offended that you even had to ask.
That I didn't know or that I had to ask. It was just so gross.
That seems like an outsider music fan's kind of position on, you were genuinely curious about learning something like, about a music that she cared about. And she was just disgusted that you didn't already know. So disgusted that she wouldn't even take 3 seconds to explain who this person was to create another fan.
Yep.
What?
I think that's kind of a good way to do it. Because if she was like, oh my gosh, it's Billy Childish, you gotta check. Like, would you have, it might have like ruined it.
Yeah, it would have been like,
you know,
oh.
You wouldn't have like delved.
Mm-hmm. But maybe. I went deep.
Oh, you think it was the challenge
yeah.
that kind of pushed him into it?
Yeah, I kind of worked against her because I was like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to listen to all that music then. Just to see.
I'm curious about, okay, so outsider music. I'm very fascinated by this. On our show, we've had, it's like people have brought noise music. I've got a lot of friends who were like deeply into that scene and in, you know, kind of various cities. And I've always sort of just been like, a lot of this just does not sound like music to me. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to have an open mind, sort of. I can be judgmental, and I'm pretty judgmental about noise music just from like a listenability standpoint. So,
and I love it.
And you love it. And I know a ton of people who are really, really into it. And it's a deep well of noise.
I like it much more in a live setting or with headphones on when it's more personal is a good thing too. Mm. I don't know. It's really fun to make, I imagine.
But if you're strictly a fan, if you're a listener of noise music, are you kind of keeping yourself purposefully at distance from a larger community of music fans? Or like, is there, I don't know, is there a sense of pride in being part of that scene that is different than other scenes?
I assume so, but I have never been in a scene per se, or felt like I've been in this scene, like especially for noise music, because I, as silly as it is, I feel like it's kind of elitist, which is like really like against what the point of noise music is.
That's what I feel like too. I feel like it's very elitist, and that speaks to your story, Andy, about that bartender who refused you service because you didn't know who Billy Childish was.
I think mostly it depends on like what your aesthetic qualities are and what you and you know. I've always had like real difficulty. I went to school and did art and like learned from a personal standpoint, like the value of like making things during my day and like filling my mind with just thinking about doing things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But got really caught up trying to decide what's good and what's bad, and being really drawn to things that people that were like maybe more defined as bad and like not acceptable in like the professional art world, or like the professional music world, where people are signed and things are mastered. Like mastering is something that I like, I think it's, I don't understand, like I don't have the
ears for it.
But I understand it's like really important, you know, like at some point, if you're gonna really like get into the music, if you're gonna tour, and if you're gonna like, if you want vinyl, if you want to be signed, like mastering is obviously mm-hmm. something you have to do. I just can't hear why that's good and in any artistic form. I really like bad paintings. I really like good paintings as well, though, and I don't really have a barometer of how to value these things, which I concern myself with all the time.
Now,
that's kind of like me with food.
That's
like,
true.
Like, I love,
you are an outsider food. Artist when it comes to food,
because I love bad food. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to eat shitty food sometimes just so that good food is even better.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got to do that. That's good.
Yeah.
I think that I'm. Well, I don't want to talk about myself. I do want to have a follow up question there, because you said something that was I'm curious about. You said you tend to find yourself drawn to things that are bad. Do you think it is a specific? Do you think you have a sort of a objective understanding of what's considered good, what's considered bad, and you are drawn to something simply because it's bad? Or do you just sort of remove all filters and take it as it is, and you tend to kind of conflate the two just because that's your taste?
I don't know, really. I don't think I have a good filter of what's good and bad. I think I have like a really something that I wish I could unlearn, a societal idea of what's acceptable and not acceptable. But I don't think that that's fair at all. And that's why I don't like, I always, with music, I started with the 8-track and things like that. And I always assumed that at some point, after sort of learning how to mix with that, I would move to something, you know, more professional and like more acceptable, and make music that people would listen to and be like, oh, this is really good. I'm proud to listen to this. I want to tell other people about it, you know? But I haven't ever done that, and I've just made music. I've actually gone down to a fucking mini 4-track. That's like what I record on now. I know things are good and bad, or acceptable or not acceptable, because like not many people enjoy it. People aren't like, holy fuck, I need to share this. Like, you know, I put some like, and it's like, it's kind of one of the terrible things about putting music out independently in the digital age, is that you look back 2 days later and it just says like 4 plays, and you're like, right. Fuck. Fucking Little Bow Wow has like hundreds of thousands of plays.
Yeah,
we understand.
It's like doing 1 point something.
Doing a local podcast, it can be frustrating.
Yeah. It's weird, right? Like, I mean, there are no particular rules. It just works. The internet works for some people. Some kinds of music, people are just like more comfortable sharing.
Yeah.
And I mean, the dumb thing is that like, I mean, Little Bow Wow, it's like worked fine, but like, I feel like, you know, if I were to get 1,000 plays instead of 4 plays, it wouldn't make a difference at all. Like that wouldn't mean anything to the internet.
Right.
But there's like a real drastic difference between 4 plays and 1,000 plays.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's something that I definitely like have learned to not really focus on.
Was that ever a big consideration in the music you were making? Were you ever envisioning an audience specifically, and was that ever playing a role in what you made?
I think when I started making music, I started putting things together and being like, this is an album, this is like an EP, this is like, and then is MySpace, the MySpace years, like, I was in college and had the free time, and I was able to like make so much music. So I could do, you know, a new little collection of songs like every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I could like completely put 10 new songs up on MySpace, and I'd be like, this is it, tight. Like, I'm just going to put this right here, and then I'll just like fucking wait for Pitchfork. Like, yeah. You know, and then it just, but yeah. And I don't know. You play shows. Like, shows are good because like people are right there. Like, that's really satisfying.
Yeah.
But I've also played shows where nobody was there. So
was it so okay? So I guess there's a difference between writing with an audience in mind and aspiring to have an audience. It sounds like you were doing both at first. You were hopefully looking to grow an audience and maybe creating music that you thought was pleasurable to a group of people. Is that fair to say?
I assumed that that's something that I would be able to like do at some point. Make like songwriting and production a thing that I could. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, I do want to get into some specifics because you do a lot of stuff, but we probably should play some music to give people just a little taste. I know you brought a kind of a broad sampling of the stuff that you've done. What would you like to start off with tonight?
Well, if it's chronologically, I brought a song that I recorded a couple of years ago when I was in a band here in Portland called Tiananmen Bear. And the song is called Rot Gut. So that's like super different from what I was doing before that and super different from what I'm doing now. Because this is just like, this is like a four-piece old dude rock and roll band. Is a song that I had written a while before that for another band, like a two-piece band I was in college called Gang of Virgins. It's what did we do? This was like the recording is a live recording. It's like the only album we put out was a live recording of our first show at the place downtown that used to be next to Backspace, which used to exist.
Satyricon?
No.
Town Lounge?
What?
The Town Lounge?
No. Oh, fuck. I don't. It's like was literally there was Backspace and then the weird place that had fries and then this was right next to it.
I know totally what you're talking about. I cannot think of the name right now.
Really I've nice, seen shows there. Venue. It was a good spot. They had like a little upstairs. Yeah. I don't remember what the name of that place was, but I have
the
seen stage
was it. Was the really Someday? Nice. Big, what was it?
Was it the Someday?
Oh, Someday yeah. Lounge? No. Yeah, I think it totally was. Yeah. Yes, because I think it's written.
Is
on
that gone now?
It's gone.
Oh,
it's
that's...
been gone. That place is cool. They would offer you like a recording of your show, like a video recording, if you wanted it, or you could even like stream it online towards the end of their run.
And that's where this album came from. So
this was like the sound man was like offered to record it, and I think he mastered it. I guess so. This is like. So this is the only thing I've ever had mastered.
I think we'll be able to hear the difference. So this is a song called Rot Gut by Tiananmen Bear.
What do you think landlords in the afterlife are like? I bet they're all pretty much the same. Call me insane, call me anything you want. Would a rose not rot by any other name? We sing songs full time and survive on the side. Tastes like somebody's pissed in our champagne. So sorry, you wanted me to kiss your lips. I was trying to pick your brains. Now all the cool kids at the back of the bus, they have no idea why they're so cool. But they're off to prison from 8 until 3. Ain't it funny how they think it's school? Teacher turned warden, no passion to teach. If they teach what they want, then their contract is breached. Now all the best teachers are out on the streets with the profits. We call them bums. And the sunlight is fading, and the moon is in sight. It looks like it's going to be one hell of a night. Police man pulls me over, he says you're lucky to be alive. Now let me see your license. this is the life. And these are the people who love you so much. This is the life. And these are the people who love you so much. This is the life. And these are the people. To keep 'em insane, to keep 'em out here. Oh, I love you, my dear, but I'm afraid love ain't enough. Thank you very much. This Leonera is coming up in a few minutes. You're wonderful. Thank you very much.
I did have a time in high school when we would just, the only thing we had was a 6 foot bong.
The only thing
we could smoke out of. And so we would just do we got so good. Like you watch it from a distance. If you guys have smoked a bong that's like big like that.
3 feet, oh, yeah. I think is mm-hmm. as big as I got. And it ruined my evening, actually. It was too much.
We just used to like 7 or 8 hits, like clear the whole thing. We were just so good at it. We had contests. It was just like no problem. and now I feel like I've been smoking consistently and really dedicated to it. And mm-hmm. it's just like, I'm just like, I can be high after one hit from mm-hmm. anything.
Which is probably a better thing, but it makes you feel like your age, like everything is slower and weaker than it used to be.
Right.
Well, I'm interested. I guess it's going to be legal everywhere in like 3 years. So this will be a more evolved conversation every single year.
So then we can all stop talking about weed so fucking much.
No, I hope it goes the other direction. So like I have a theory about certain pop songs. They're kind of like life cycle. Even if they start out as a cool song, when they become like children's music or something you could play at in a basketball arena, I feel like that's the life cycle of it. So I think with weed, the weed conversation, it's still on the life cycle where it's still a cool thing for cool people to talk about. But there will be a time when like little kids and the very like your parents are, well, not your parents, Sandy, because my parents, for example, are very into talking about it. Mm-hmm. And that's when it will become like the stadium rock of conversation and we can ignore it. It's no longer for us. It's like the music of Queen, you know, they started out as a viable rock band that, you know, kind of rocked a little bit, but now they're children's music. So that'll be weird.
Children are getting super high and people are smoking in stadiums.
Exactly.
It's chill.
At that point, don't worry about it.
It's a cool thing to talk about. We're still...
Until there's weed sports for all the stoners to go to.
Mm.
Or it could go down kind of like the Billy Joel route. Like, is it cool?
Like a vape off.
I really like talking about it, but I can't say it's cool, but everyone seems to like it, including children. You know, could be in that middle ground.
Mm-hmm. Or like Slayer, where it just crosses all boundaries.
I see what Slayer, I think, is still like weed now.
I don't know, man. Play some Slayer for a kid and see what happens.
Kids love Slayer?
Pretty stoked on it, yeah. Oh, pretty much every kid loves Slayer.
So, Rob, when did Tiananmen Bear, which we were just listening to, what's the time frame for that? You're 21, you've learned to play guitar. As you're learning to record, when do you get into kind of these formal...
That was in Portland. I think we were together about 2 years ago. It was like almost exactly 1 year of being a band. So what year is it now?
It is the year 2016.
It was probably like the year of 2013.
It was vaguely. A
good year.
It was a good year.
It was weird. I just had a friend who I'm involved in like the local poetry scene and things like that. I had a friend who was like the slam master at the poetry slam, which is like real funny words. he wanted to start.
Is that
a band.
Where you say poems in a way like this?
Exactly.
Okay. Just make sure.
There's a lot of slam things in Portland. There's a very healthy scene, and
Where can people see some slam? I don't want to derail you from your story, but I think this is something people don't know about.
It's interesting to me. I didn't know this was going on.
Yeah, I would like to go see some slam poetry.
It's at one of the theaters now. I don't remember the name of it. I could look it up on my telephone over there. But it's the slam used to happen at Backspace. So I would go to Backspace all the time. It was definitely a really great venue. I really loved Backspace. When I first moved to Portland, I went there a lot. And then I've played music there almost in every way that I played, you know, music there, done poetry there, had a little slam poetry stint. I'll nice. Admit it.
Yeah.
It was great. So then this, my friend Aaron Bradley decided he wanted to start a band. He was in a band before called, I don't remember, which is a bummer because we had the same drum kit and it was written on the front of the drum kit. And I just can't remember, looked at it for a whole year.
That band is lost to the sands of time.
Oh, Hollywood Tans.
Oh, okay.
A band called Hollywood Tans.
You can probably find them on MySpace as well.
Definitely. And then, yeah, so we started the band. And I was so excited to be so loud. I didn't know it was possible that I could be in a band. My timing could match up with another human being's timing.
Yeah.
And it was so weird to do band practice, you know, once a week. We all, you know, it was a very something that I wasn't used to at all, a kind of discipline. And we sucked at band practice and we were a really sloppy band. But we really hit some good moments. And yeah, I would say being loud was really influential to my way of thinking about music.
I was going to go back to kind of your timeline and your progression as a musician, but I'm wondering, do you think of your kind of musical creation as linear like that? Is everything sort of connected, or has built on something you did previously, or is every new kind of instantiation of the music you make its own little thread?
For the most part, I think that every time I've made any kind of changes, it's like a backlash to the last thing that I did.
Gotcha.
Where when I started making music, it was very acoustic guitar and singing. And then it was just suddenly just really hating that, or hating the idea of doing that. It just it's not a reasonable way to think, because so much good work happens on an acoustic guitar. It's a completely fantastic instrument. But you get gigs in coffee shops and stuff, and you're just oh man, I'm at this coffee shop playing the acoustic guitar and singing. It's just not what I had in mind. And I think every time I make music, I have an idea of something, and then it turns out to be not exactly what I thought it would be like. And I learn different things about, I get some different ways to record, or different sort of understandings about how to balance things and how to make something interesting. And then it's a progression.
When you say that maybe certain genres or certain modes of expression aren't what you thought they would be when you got in, what do you mean by that? Is there an example that you have of a letdown in a specific genre that
I probably the unifying thing is just it ends up being more difficult to make a really good any kind of song or music.
Right.
I think I've always approached things very naively, where I think it might be really easy for me. I think that's a lot a lot to do with just being a white man in the world. You're just you're just like, no, this would be, fuck yeah, I'll just do this and it'll be great. And then
you just find the easiest path downhill.
Yeah.
I can relate to that, certainly.
I think that that's, and
I can't relate to any of that.
I would say in the last few years, it's been much more with everything. You look at it, you listen to it, you're just like, man, I was kind of picturing me being able to do a song that was so great like this, and you just do songs, and all of a sudden you've done 100 songs that are folk songs, and none of them are good Bob Dylan songs, or they're just songs.
Yeah.
And so then I end up looking back at that, being completely happy and proud with this body of work, but then just wanting to never hear it again and not have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
And then so from that got into electronic things, and then a band thing. Everything I think is kind of a linear frustratingly linear path. And I jump back as well. I've gone, like, I've recorded acoustic guitar singy songs in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That are just, like, the same as before. And then that suddenly feels good again. I don't know.
My favorite thing that you've done, personally, is Cold Gold Chain, your rap persona.
Yeah, that was,
which you recently stopped doing.
I did recently stop doing it.
Why did you, what about that made you stop doing it?
I became really I think one of the things was that it was funny. I definitely use humor a good amount. But I really hate like comedy music mm-hmm. with all my heart. Like there's nothing that Weird Al Yankovic has ever done that I like. I don't like that fucking really. Concords thing.
I love it all.
I just like something about it just like has always bothered me. I grew up definitely. Doing Cold Gold Chain was a moment where I decided that I suddenly had been in that band. Like Cold Gold Chain came right after this band. Mm-hmm. And I had been loud. I'd played shows to like where there were like lots of people paying attention, and like that was like a things on stage where you're just like, oh, I can do cool things. That's like a little bit closer to what I like imagined, just like sharing music would be like. And rap music is probably the music that I've listened to the most with the most love from a young age. So I thought I will make something that I like and will listen to, rather than like. Within a few weeks I will cringe and be embarrassed of.
Right.
But I would definitely say that when I listen to Cold Gold Chain, I definitely have moments of cringing and being embarrassed of it as well.
Don't be embarrassed. It's awesome.
I don't feel like, you know, pityingly embarrassed. I just like, there are things where I'm like, how did you do that? Like, how did you make your mind be like, yeah, this is a good idea. mostly in the end, it was very much perceived. I didn't really want it to be a persona. I would much rather just be like someone who makes rap music, but it was definitely like in order to enter the space to be able to make that, I was being a persona.
Mm-hmm.
As being a persona, I was then like using things from definitely like a culture and a community that I didn't really have any direct connection to other than having grown up and like listened to and loved that music. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was doing live shows. So it was like interacting with people, and those people would perceive it as a joke. Consequently, they're perceiving it as like what I would say would be appropriating something in very poor taste. And I didn't mean to do it in that way at all. I think like I just like didn't work out how to make it. If anybody was thinking of it like that, then I didn't want to do it. Just because I came at it from the approach that I did doesn't make me right or them right.
Right. It's a tough needle to thread, having done some rapping myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, you do want to be personally expressive.
Right.
But there's a certain amount of artifice to the mode of music that is necessary to make it that thing.
Yeah.
So you have to, I mean, for me, I think of the idea of like swagger has to be in what you're doing. So you naturally have to, or organically have to tack on to whatever it is you're trying to sincerely say.
Right.
And that can veer off into corny. That can come off as maybe you're joking. Yeah. It's really tough to control, but I'm curious because you come from poetry, and I feel like, you know, poetry is the very sincere, non-artificial version of what you're talking about.
Yeah. And slam poetry is really close to that in that area as
because
well.
Because it's that performative element of the
yeah,
slam.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people who are slam poets become rappers at some point. It's definitely a weird space to navigate. And if you're, and particularly because like I felt like I was, a lot of the songs specifically reference other songs that like were integral to my just songs that have made up my life, you know, like mm-hmm. And so when I often I'd be making references to something that my audience didn't know what that thing was.
Right.
Because we live in Portland, and like people who came to those shows were not even necessarily rap fans. They were just like there. And it was like, it's like, great. That's like, that maybe sounds mean to the people who were at the shows, but like, mostly just my friends were at the shows.
And they understand their own ignorance.
So, yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's not going to be a surprise to them when they hear this.
No, no. Right? And they know just like I'm an idiot. Mm-hmm. So it's chill. But yeah, like, I felt like basically, you know, like there was some, I mean, even in the time that I was thinking about it, there were some real changes in how I like thought about these things. And I became, I felt like it was just better to respectfully stop doing that.
Yeah. And you contribute, you scratch that itch a little bit, at least you have that,
yeah,
that artifact to look back on from this part of your musical.
Yeah. And like, to credit my own ego, I did have like a final show, release my greatest hits and a music video. Yeah, and then I was like, exactly. No, I'm done, guys.
It's funny because the one hip hop album we released was called Greatest Hits Volume 1.
Oh, cool.
And so that was sort of the same thinking. We knew we were, and it was mostly about laziness and a little bit of what you're talking about, that we just kind of let it go. It's funny that works out that way. Andy, why don't you give us some music to, just enjoy? We don't have to talk about it so much.
I was going to play you a Cold Gold Chain track.
Oh, well, yeah, by all means.
Since we're talking about it right now, I feel like we got to play a track.
Which is your favorite off of Greatest Hits?
Is it
Best Of?
This is Greatest Hits.
Greatest Hits.
I was trying to make a weed joke. I was going to have a mixed picture of me, you know, smoking weed. Because a lot of Cold Gold Chain songs were just about weed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
My favorite song on I'm looking at Do Not Leave Your Dog Alone.
Oh, I mean, it's funny.
That song, Sad Dads. That's my jam.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, yeah. That's my friend who was in Tiananmen Bear made a beat, and then I wrote Sad Dads to that song, and then another friend of mine like made a remix, and that ended up being the, so I feel like this is kind of a mastered song as well, probably because someone else did it.
Oh, crazy.
Cold gold chain, he a motherfucking Kennedy. Physically present, but he checked out mentally. Decked out mentally. Wrecked on the daily. Wrecked on the daily.
Wrecked on the daily.
Silly Billy, look at craze. You could call me baby. I get wild, kid. Call me Double G. The way I like to lick your eyelids. Stay high, kids.
Stay high. Stay high. Stay high. Stay high. Stay high.
So that was some Cold Gold Chain, now retired, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, and was that four track too? Like, what's the recording process that? How does that differ?
That was specifically, I had a four track recording of that on a completely different beat, just like a looped beat, which is what generally like my own beats are pretty, just like one thing repeating. Mm-hmm. And then a friend of mine who makes music on the name Kyanite, offered to do some Chopped and Screwed remixes. So I took like the four tracks that I had recorded and sent them to him separately. And then they just like created this from scratch. I think the beat is complete. They used the vocal tracks and sort of scrapped everything from the beat.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds super, super full, and the low end is...
Yeah, that's what track. I would say, like, it's weird. This was a weird experience because, like, what I was talking about earlier, like, that is exactly what I would love to have been able to make every Cold Coltrane track sound like, or at least Cold Coltrane didn't have just rap songs, mm-hmm. per se, but I would have loved to have made... That's, like, what I was going for in my mind was like, a Chopped and Screwed, like, having a real heavy bass... And and like those specific kind of vocal manipulations, like that, I really love those the deep drop.
What's some of your favorite hip hop? Either now or historically.
Historically, the Loonies, I got the Operation Stackola album. Oh, I would say was really like that huge in my life. Reference.
Loonies, nice.
I've never heard Loonies dropped on this show.
That it's a really good album. I check it out. It was weird. When I grew up in Germany, and the music that comes through from America is like not exactly what you would guess. Like it's pretty. Mm-hmm. There's like the huge things, and then the things that are successful are like they're not necessarily the most successful things in America. They just like work in Europe. And the Loonies, I Got Five on It, was like nuts.
That was huge. Well, yeah. That was big here.
Yeah, that's.
But I don't know anyone who got into the album. I don't remember there being a next hit or anything like that.
I love that song though, and it was like every rap compilation ever.
That's true.
Like, it's still so good. I mean, there are different mixes of it as well. There were, I think the E40. There's a song with E40 on it, like that a version, mm-hmm. and that's a good. I think. That specifically, like, I had a friend who traveled to America and got the album and came back with it. It wasn't, like, initially available. And I think I ended up getting it on a trip to England.
So did this guy become, like, was he, like, the hub of music for a while? Was his opinion, did that solidify his status?
To a certain extent. As a tastemaker? For sure. Like, yeah, because, like, there was a lot about it at that time in my life. It was, like, there's like, such ridiculous things about that album. There's, like, a little character who is a cartoon character, and he's, like, a used condom. And it just, like, pops up throughout the booklet. And this is, like, definitely a time in my life where you got the CD, and then you, like, combed through that booklet.
Oh, yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. for a long time. And
as long as I ever bought CDs, that was my...
Yeah.
Like, I'd spend, you know, a good 40 minutes with that thing right there.
Yeah, yeah. This fucking used condom cartoon character like pops up throughout it, and we just like started drawing that. Like, yeah, the Loonies became a thing.
That's awesome.
And I definitely like. I mean, I know the lyrics to the album, but mostly I like. It's the kind of thing where I know the sounds to the lyrics at this point. I don't even remember like what the words are, but I know. But I can just like noise
the shape
along
of
to
the
it.
Song, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
My heart. Yeah.
I would say like growing up, like the Fugees as well. Like I saw the Fugees when they came through on the score tour, in Germany. They were like heavily on rotation. There was some, like, there's a lot of German rap as well that I listened to. I feel like there was, a semi cool, semi corny band called Freundeskreis, which means friend circle, which somehow just like works better at sounding cool in German than I feel like a rap group called Friend Circle would really not go over well in America.
Just a but, circle of friends rapping.
Yeah.
Friend Circle is like two like 21-year-old girls who are pretending to be identical twins doing really twee indie rock. That's Friend Circle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a free idea I'm going to put out there in the ether. But yeah, it doesn't work as a hip hop
for some
group.
Reason. I mean, yeah, I feel like I had never even thought about how bad that name was until right now. But like Freundeskreis. They did an amazing song with some African rappers, and that was like a really great. It's called Tabula Rasa.
Mm.
It's like such a jam. Then right now I feel like I listen to like all the boring things. I really love that Beyonce album. I definitely like I like listen to random things on Tidal. I liked Tidal. I got that.
Hmm.
And then I just like buy. So like in terms of rap music, I just like am interested. I like L Sweatshirt. He's like a fantastic rapper. I think
he's
like
really good.
Weathered the weirdness of like where the way he started as a rapper with Odd Future and like all the weird things. He's like still just a fantastic rapper.
And he was the guy that went to like boarding school right after he put out his first mixtape or something like that, and he was away for 3 years or something.
Yeah. And like all like his the first album was really good, like the free like mixtape. Mm-hmm. There was that video, like everything. I feel like L Sweatshirt's really great. I like Vince Staples.
Yeah, I liked his last album. I think came out earlier this year.
Yeah,
it was really good. I enjoyed that.
It has some of his music videos are like ridiculous, like really good, wonderful. Yeah, I feel like music videos are super fun these days because they don't mean anything anymore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love music videos still. I absolutely love them.
Yeah. Yeah, Andy is very plugged in. Oftentimes, when I show up on time for the show, well, Andy will treat me to the newest music videos.
Oh, I've got a few. I've got a few choice ones.
Well, in the spirit of
a rapper who's really good that I like. Have you heard the Lost Oddful Dodger?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, she's.
We haven't had her on the show, but you know, big fans of her and mm-hmm. Mike Bogan, and they did that mm-hmm. EP together.
Yeah, Rare Treat.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really
which
good.
Is really good.
There's a couple of videos out for that now. Check those out. Mm-hmm. They're both really cool. Mike Capes just dropped a new video. For a song off of Concrete Dreams, it's going to be out real soon. They just did a listening party. It might already be out by the time
this all those guys do really good videos too. Not only is the music really, really good, but they have a nice visual style when they put it together like that.
The Mike Capes video is just him like walking around in the street, and it's just like dark and like it's all like scribbled on with like neon, and it's just really cool. It feels like really old school.
Yeah. Well, in the spirit of keeping things, you know, diverse, I know Rob, you brought some other music. And I'm sure it's going to take us down a different rabbit hole of your career. What else did you bring to share with us tonight?
I feel like the next good one to listen to would be the song. So right now I do a project called Uncool that has mostly been like electronic recordings and like not just electronic recordings, but instrumental music. I have one song up on SoundCloud that has lyrics, and this is so I have like a little EP of songs with words in it that I haven't released yet. But the first Cold Gold Chain show ever was at Habesha Lounge. Did you guys ever go there?
Yeah, a bunch of times.
Yeah, the doorman Nick with the longish hair, or he used to have longish hair. He like puts out his music project is called a Thousand Trash Cans, and he has like a little record label that releases tapes and stuff like that, and he does compilations. And so this song is going to be on, I think, their last compilation.
What is the name of this track?
This is called Game Over.
Nice.
It's called Game Over, but I mean I could change that because I haven't released it yet. So
man, you pulled it out of nowhere. That was amazing.
Yeah. All right, here's Game Over by Uncool.
ass on cool, smoking mota, cutting coke with baking soda. Game over. In the middle of my darkest day, I wanna get paid.
The other day, me and Nate and our friend Jeff were having a conversation about condoms and how come there aren't things printed on condoms.
There what? Are, aren't they?
Why aren't there?
Well, it I mean, probably it.
Yeah.
It probably impacts their efficacy. I mean, to put too much material, I think you're already asking quite a bit of the latex.
We'll get around that part, but what should we put on it? I was thinking like a finger, like a large finger. Like maybe one of those furry snow snakes.
Yeah, I was thinking that's a brand. Like furry snow snake is like totally a brand of a designer.
Like mythical creatures, like unicorn yeah. horns.
Mythical yeah. creature condoms.
Yeah, they're do very it's well kind of like Portland, the
I think. Yeah.
The barbed wire bicep tattoo of condoms. Mm-hmm. So the monster energy drink of condoms mm-hmm. is the fuzzy trouser snake.
Or like just like an all over print spaghetti. Yeah. Like you get into the food world.
Or like one would have like a turd on it. So it looks like it looks like someone's shitting out of their vagina.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah, that's really probably disgusting.
That'd be the one that sold though.
Well, it's a gag. It's a novelty one. It keeps things you know, it's for couples who have been together for a long time. It's not quite spicing things up, but it is bringing a little levity to a familiar partner, you know. Looks you like you're shitting on your vagina.
You just look yeah. down and you're like, "Oh, yeah. We're doing that funny Ted thing."
Yeah. Or you just buy them and it's on the box and you think about the yeah. idea.
It came in a multi-pack with like a corn cob and a pickle and a turd.
Uh-oh. All that's left is the turd condom. Are we doing this or what?
I used the finger and then I used the knife print and the yeah. spaghetti. Oh, I've got left is
the
turd.
The turd condoms are for the horniest nights when there is no stopping you.
Or the one that's just a massive hair.
Mm-hmm.
Like a dreadlock.
It's like those games where you like there's like a poison pill card or something in the game, and you'll sometimes get it in your hand and you want to play it. You want to play that turd condom card on the night when it's like you're both at your maximum horniest. So it doesn't really matter. You're like, if I'm going to use this, it has to be now, because yeah. if there's any discretion involved in our choices, we're never going to use this turd condom. But a pickle's a good one. Corn on the cob, that's a great one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this for days.
Yeah.
We
a bigger, so you know, a larger penis imprinted on the condom that you have. Like a smaller image of what is obviously a thicker, veinier version of your own penis.
Or just at a different perspective. Or you had one with just extra veins.
Yeah.
Just veins. It's kind of clear. No, that's a good one. But it adds some sweet veins.
I'm afraid that people don't like as much laughter in their lovemaking as we think they do when we're trying to market this product. Yeah,
you don't want a girl to look down and go, "Whoa, that's veiny."
Yeah.
You know those sleeves people buy that have tattoos on them?
Right. Yeah.
You could do like
yeah.
that. I feel like that exact design would make my penis look very tough.
So you're saying the condom doesn't even have to have a tip on it. It can just be a just latex that. Sheath that you pull over.
Just completely non-functional. Yeah, it's just there. It just yeah. actually makes things a little more difficult and awkward.
It's targeted to married couples.
But it's great.
You know, you can get you can get like photos of your children superimposed on it, you know. You know, this is just like it's a really good gift for a longtime partner.
I just want like an oversized tube of Lifesavers printed on it.
Rolos. Like an yeah. open pack of Rolos.
Yeah. That'd be great. Or one Kit Kat.
What's the Rolos like jingle name? Like, what do they say? You can't share your roll. Like something about not sharing on Rolos.
I thought it was Rolos. It's a Rolo of fun.
I don't remember a Rolo jingle. It was that year. I imagine there was a pretty intense German Rolo jingle.
I think it's an English. I think there's an English Rolo thing. Okay. Where you have your last Rolo and you can't like give it up. I feel like it sends the completely wrong message for a condom. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's fine. It, okay. It's of a piece with these other terrible ideas that we're talking about.
How about, yeah, how about like animal teeth? Like just like one shark tooth?
I like that.
That'd be pretty gross.
Flowers, your wife's favorite flower. There's a whole garden of condoms.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad, garden of condoms. That could be a tagline somewhere. Yeah. Well, Andy, why don't you play us a little bit of music? Let's mix it up. Let's keep this parade rolling.
Oh, man.
This decorated condom of an episode.
Hot Victory came out with a new mixtape. It's an album. And this one has no drums on it.
Oh.
Well, it is drums. It's not live drums. They're playing electronic. It's just, this is a synthesizer thing.
Gotcha. So there's no actual...
Hot Victory was a...
drum kit.
Two drummers sharing a drum kit with other drums added onto it. And sometimes they would do synth stuff or have somebody do synth stuff. And they've kind of moved on towards more of synthy things. They just played the first show in probably longer than a year last month. And now this tape's coming out.
What's the name of the song you'd like to play, Andy?
I'm going
to
play the song... I'm going to just murder this. Primaveo Saltus.
Oh, yeah. You said it exactly right as far as I know.
Yeah, okay. We'll be right back. were driving to Spokane, Greta got really upset and cried so hard she threw up all over herself.
She really cried till she threw up?
She threw up goldfish all over.
It wasn't related at all to stomach problems. She was just crying so much that
sometimes kids cry so hard they puke.
Mm-hmm. Was the goldfish still
alive? They were just...
She hadn't swallowed them whole. No. She didn't like duck them down without chewing.
We got them into a bowl real quick and they're good.
I've heard that if that happens, if it happens quickly enough, you can put it in like an ice cube tray and save it for later, kind of like baby food, if it hasn't been too digested.
There's like a 5 second rule.
Like a
rule.
Goldfish paste that you can later feed to your baby.
Where's the line?
It's ill-defined.
Okay.
I think you know when you cross it.
Oh, yeah, sometimes I'm going to start doing that with my cat.
I mean,
every time my cat pukes, I'm just going to fucking freeze it.
Yeah, your cat would love that.
Yeah, have bowls.
Your cat, give it like the 2 hours it needs to forget that it ever vomited before, and then serve it up to them ice cold. They would love that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, cats love eating cat puke, too.
Cats love to puke, which is a surprise to me. I had a cat for a very short amount of time, maybe 6 months or so, and he puked, I don't know, like... 8 or 9 times, like different occasions he puked. He was never sick.
My cat pukes all the time.
They just have it wired into him.
Yeah.
That's part of their digestion.
Ugh. I mean, it's not a controversial thing to say, but I do not like puking at all. It's one of my least favorite things to do.
I'm sure some people really like
it. I want to pull back the curtain about myself a little bit. I don't like to vomit. That's something you need to know about me.
Important. Sometimes you just have to.
Who are into it. But the people that are into it are really into puking. They just love to do it. They love to do it with flair.
Yeah, it's in terms of something that you would like to do, it's an all or nothing kind of thing. Either you are way into puking or you don't like it. I think that there's not much gray area.
I've never been able to induce puking, like put my finger on my tongue or whatever people do when they do that thing. And then puke like on purpose when I'm like, when you're like, this, it is sensible right now for me to puke.
So even when you have to puke, but it hasn't come up on its own.
Yeah, I just got to wait for it. Yeah. I just think of really gross things.
Oh.
Yeah.
Of puking and it usually makes me puke.
Yeah.
Usually I can just like talk to my body and be like, body, we got to do this now or we're going to have problems. And I can kind of,
you can reason
make
with it
happen.
That's sensible.
I have
that's
full
a good
control over my body when I'm very drunk, but only in the direction of getting things out of it. And then I lose all that ability. It's a really shitty superpower. It's awful. Man, when you drink a lot of shit, you're going to puke.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess everyone has that superpower.
It's much better than being very hungover.
It is.
Being very, very hungover is terrible. Sometimes you puke as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that you can't control. That falls outside the purview of your superpower.
True.
It's true.
Makes you think. Rob, I know you brought one more track to share with us.
Yeah, I did.
What's the last thing in...
This has a couple of things that I want to say about it. So the thing... The track is by... I produce the music, and then my friend Dave does the singing. Dave is a friend of mine who I work with in my day job. I work at a day program for adults with developmental disabilities, and Dave is like one of the greatest artists that I know. He makes great paintings, and he's very dedicated to paintings and drawings, but also has a very talented singing. Like the way he sings is fascinating and great. So like the way I got to know about this was by doing the radio show. I work at a place called Full Life, and I used to produce a show called the Full Life Radical Radio Show, which is now still on the air. It's just someone else produces it. It's on Freeform Portland, which is a cool like local radio station. And we would have clients doing, you can pick your own song and then they can karaoke over it. And every time Dave picked a song, he would just like, he wouldn't mimic the words. He makes up his own melody kind of over it. And so basically and he's just like down to make things at the drop of a hat. So I make music at home. I just bring my four track in and I'm like, do you want to hang out for like half an hour? And I just give him the microphone and he just like listens to it for a minute. And then he just sings and we just record.
Man, that's
the
amazing.
First thing he sings, and it's nuts. It's so good. He often does things like that are like he picks weird classical music and then just sings like someone singing classical music. Not like what he's like deciding. He's kind of filtering that and singing his own way, but adding a melody. Mm-hmm. So I made this track with samples from a band that I love so much called Mikachu and the Shapes. Are you guys familiar with them at all?
No.
They're a band from London, and the sort of it's a three piece, and they're all kind of art music students. Like they went to like I don't know what university in London, and sort of composition and things like that. And then they make this like sort of pop noise band together. And the front woman is named Mika Levy. She's like done a lot of wonderful soundtrack work. She did the soundtrack to Under the Skin. With I think Scarlett Johansson or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just like a really great soundtrack, and she like does nice compositions. And then Mikachu and the Shapes is like a pop, like it's like very drum oriented kind of like rhythmic pop noise band. And they did an album that was a live album with the London Orchestra. I don't know which, but like some kind of orchestra. So it's kind of this melding of worlds. And the live album is called Chopped and Screwed because Mika Levy loves Chopped and Screwed remixes so much, which I love as well. So like I kind of like learned about this person, was just like, holy fuck, like basically everything you do, I want to hear. So I used samples from a song off the Chopped and Screwed album by Mikachu and the Shapes, which is also a sort of melodic theme used in Under the Skin soundtrack. She kind of like took that and then made this soundtrack piece out of it. And so I just
it sounds like the most contemporary music that exists.
I think so. Like I'm really like, you know, like we just me and Dave made four songs, and we just like or three songs, I think. It's on also a SoundCloud page for music that we've made at the program I work at called Happy Heart Records. And it's just like I just like make weird music and bring it in, and Dave just like fucking kicks out the jams.
Well, that's amazing. I'm really excited to hear that. What is the name of this song?
Rasta.
Rasta.
It is specifically about Dave's dog, whose name is Rasta.
Oh.
would be amazing to subject different guests to that. Like Andy and I's script, my questions stay the same. Andy's reactions to whatever's being said are always like generic enough that they fit in every single one.
Yeah.
And see the different kind of conversations that someone in your position as the guest could have. That's not a bad idea. And I'm sure our listeners would never know.
It's very meta. It's very meta podcast.
I feel like you almost have to. You have to have some kind of like specific hook to hang from in the podcast world because right, everyone has one.
That's why we're the most. We're the premier Pokemon podcast in Portland.
As I always say.
Yeah.
You could cue up some Nate. You could cue up some very realistic sound effects that always happen at the same time. Or yeah.
Same. Just play Sandstorm. Over and over again.
That's the whole podcast.
Yeah, that's it.
Or we do, I mean, a funny podcast would be we do a little intro and then we say, okay, we'll be back after the song break, and then it's Sandstorm for 40 minutes and that's the whole show. Mm-hmm. And we never come back from that break because we're just do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-
I'd listen to that podcast every week.
Well, it's an easy thing. I mean, if you want to pay, if you want to pay $12 a month to have that hosted, I'll do it. It can be part of our network, our podcast network.
I'd probably get more listens than this show.
It's called Darude, and it's just we say rude things for about 30 seconds, and then we say, hey, we'll be back after this break. And then it's just Sandstorm by Darude every week.
I follow a Facebook page that's the same picture of Michael Cera every day. And that's it. They just post it every day over and over again. And I, you know, it's kind of, it's like in that.
That's
vein.
Outsider Facebook. This, yeah. This would be outsider podcasting.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually kind of like it.
It's the future.
I feel like this is your idea, though, Rob. So if you want to be part of our podcast network and host Darude.
As long as it's Darude.
It's all yours.
I'm pretty down.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's an idea that, you know, we'd be happy to help support.
Cool.
This worked out good. This couldn't have worked out better.
Well, until you're on that network, Robert Duncan Gray, where can people find all the things that you're working on? What's the best way for people listening to check out your work?
I have a lot. I'm well, if you're in Portland, that like that's like a pretty good thing. But yep. on the internet, I have a website called www.robertduncangray.com. And I stay on all the social media type things with Robert Duncan Gray mostly. Like you can search for that. For music, I have a right now, I have like a litter of old things like across the internet. But the best thing right now in my mind is soundcloud.com/uncoolthemusical. And I like put different new things up there, you know, every couple of weeks or so.
Fantastic.
I host like a monthly poetry and performance series here in town at Valentine's that happens every last Sunday of every month.
Very cool.
And, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on Hot Garbage. This was a ton of fun. Thank you for bringing a wide variety of music for us. We really appreciate it. Everyone listening out there, make sure you check out RobertDuncanGray.com to find out everything he's doing. It's all great. We didn't even get to all the projects that he's been a part of. So do the deep dive. It's well worth your time. And Robert, again, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
Thanks. And thank you all for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. You can download this episode and others like it every Thursday. We suggest you do it through iTunes. It's just the easiest way. Nothing against, you know, Buzzsprout or any of our other supported platforms, but iTunes is just the simplest way. And if you want to talk to us directly, we encourage you to do so via email at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's hauTEgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. Andy, take us home with a fad jam.
This is one of Silent Partner Nate's. I guess we're going to start calling these Nate's Deep Digs.
All right. I like it.
This is a band called Candy Ambulance from upstate New York. They're a punk band, and oh man, this song is so good. It's called Yak.
All right, some Yak from Nate's Deep Cuts. For Robert Duncan Gray, for Andy, for Nate, this is Drew saying thank you again, and we'll see you next week on Hot Garbage. Soil.
plugs me in directly to the sound. Directly to the sound.